trying. I'm doing
okay,
the gorilla.
I'm tangled.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Hey, this is Adam from the Dollar Ben, and it's December 9th, Wednesday, maybe,
no,
possibly, no.
The 9th is Thursday.
Shit. It's whatever. It's Wednesday, so it's the Dollar Ben. It's always Wednesday at the Dollar Ben, as opposed to Living Between Wednesdays, where it's always between Wednesdays. Go check out Living Between Wednesdays. We haven't really pushed them in a while. LivingBetweenWednesdays.com.
Rochelle.
I know. We got to talk to Rochelle, too. We need to get that cat back on the show.
Okay. Yeah, are we pacing?
We're pacing. Okay.
Okay.
So, Sean and I did a show last night talking about our past weekend adventures.
And it was boring as compared to our exciting weekend.
Yes, we had an exciting weekend and the show sucked. We might go ahead and post it later in the week, but we didn't want to post a sucky show today. So anyway,
we'll do it tomorrow.
basically what we talked about is Wizzoworld Atlanta Comic Con convention and
books
comic convention
/ celebrity wrestlers.
Yes. And we talked about the annual Heroes sale and adventure.
I mentioned the Brooklyn Comics and Graphics Festival, but I don't know anything about it except I hear it was really awesome and everybody had fun.
Awesome.
And that's pretty much like what I said right there was what was in the show.
Okay, and so basically quick rundown of Wizzoworld Comic Convention of Comics
2010
Atlanta. I got there and I saw a lot of people, but none of them were attendees. And I saw a lot of people I knew. How about that? I knew about 25% people there. It was really awesome. I got to hang out with all of them because, as I just mentioned, there weren't a lot of attendees bothering them, buying stuff from them, and getting things signed. Which was cool because I got to hang out with my friends I hadn't seen in a while. Quick rundown.
Okay.
The top shelf guys, Andy Runton, Dwayne Ballinger, J. Chris Campbell, Rob Venditti, Van Jensen. That was awesome. I saw Chris Schweitzer. I saw Francesco Francavilla. I saw Jay Potts, John Aston, all good people to check out. And then I got to meet Ernie Hudson, which is awesome. It's been a dream of mine my entire life to meet Ernie Hudson, and I finally got a chance to. As soon as I check Kevin Sorbo off the list, I'm done. Met everybody in the world I want to meet.
Now I have a goal for 011.
Yeah. So I got to see Ernie Hudson. There were all sorts of other people there, like Carl from Walking Dead, a bunch of zombies, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, Honky Tonk Man, Kevin Nash,
Virgil.
Lita, Virgil.
Four cars.
Yeah, four cars. That was one of the funny things. On the guest list, there was four cars. One of them canceled.
But an extra car showed up.
Yeah, but it was the mystery. What did we call it? Was
the mystery machine?
Oh, God. Yeah, the Batmobile canceled, apparently.
It lost a wheel.
And
I think the Joker got away.
Probably. That probably did. That does not make for a happy Christmas. So there was all that stuff. All those people were there. What was that guy's name? John Fogler, or the dude from Balls of Fury was there, and Fanboys. Dan Fogler, his name. And it was fun just because I got to walk around and see all these ridiculous people. And take pictures. Oh, Henry Winkler was there. The Fonz hanging out with everybody.
Batman and Robin were too.
I think it was Adam West and Dirt Board.
Burt Ward.
So it was cool. That was fun. That's
not an appropriate sound to be making.
It could be misconstrued over the radio.
It could be.
So,
people did not see you.
The next day. That was quick rundown. The next day. And I got an interview. We'll get to that in a little bit. The next day, I went to the annual Heroes Con sale. Sean was there all weekend.
Yes.
While there, you know, we talked a lot about on the show that we recorded. We talked a lot about all the awesome stuff that we bought. Or mainly that I bought. I did a lot of digging. I got the pretty much entire run of Thunderstrike, and I got most of the Eric Masterson, Tom DeFalco, and Ron Friend's Thor run from back in the 90s, because y'all know that Thunderstrike number one just came out, and it got me really pumped to go back and read a bunch of my old comics, which I then did out loud to Sean while she was baking cookies last week.
It was awesome.
And I got up to an issue where there was a big twist, and I had to read the rest of them. So I bought all those at the Heroes thing and bought lots of other cool stuff. Again, we'll run down all that stuff.
It was super awesome, a lot of fun. I got to hang out and see our regulars that I missed so much. I think I even giddily hugged a lot of people. It was fun.
And afterwards, we went to the annual Heroes Aren't Hard to Find Christmas party, which was super awesome.
It was ridiculous. I just posted some pictures on the Heroes Flickr site from the sale and the party. There's one of Jason Latour. It's worth your time looking it up.
Yeah, and if you need an easy way to get there, if you just go to heroesonline.com and go to their blog section, the link's right there in the blog post that Sean did. A couple keywords from the Christmas party.
Pinecone.
Gerbil toupee.
The reverse Bill Bixby.
Machine gun hands.
Monkey hand feet. Fleshy, what is it? Naked fleshy hand.
Naked fleshy hand. Leslie. It was good times. Jason Latour, Chris Brunner, Bud Root, Andy Smith. Lots of cool people there. The Hero staff. I'd like to wish them a Merry Christmas.
I would like to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Oh, and Shelton was there, of course.
He was.
Is that his house?
He played Santa.
He did. And it was fun. It was fun, good times. And we had a lot of fun.
And Linda cooked. I love Linda. She's a great cook.
Oh, man, it was delicious.
Yes.
She kept me in mind and made Alfredo because she made meat sauce. And so she made Alfredo and fettuccine specifically so I could eat. And it was
very
delicious because she had broccoli, too. So I had some broccoli fettuccine Alfredo. Oh, so good. Anyway, we said we were going to keep this short.
Which we didn't.
We're short enough.
5 minutes.
We're good. That's good. That's good. We did an hour and a half last night, and it was terribly boring.
It was.
So, but we're not going to, you know, we're not going to leave the show at that. We wouldn't make you guys download a 5-minute show of just Sean and I rambling real quick.
No, we'll make you do an hour and a half of that.
Later.
In, yeah, a couple weeks.
But what I want to do here is, throughout the year, I got really kind of busy doing a lot of things, and a lot of things kind of slipped through the cracks on me. And
you can blame me. It's okay.
That's okay. It's not your fault. So there's been quite a few interviews that we've accumulated, not to mention the big interviews that we have, like the hour ones. There's like a bunch like from like HeroesCon that I never even posted. There's a couple other interviews that I did. And so I'm going to go ahead and take this time now to throw some of those interviews because they're really, really good. I just didn't get to them and they kind of fell through the cracks, like I said. So here's a few interviews that we collected over the year that I never got a chance to get out to you guys. And here's the opportunity to do it. The first one I want to start with, Rich Tomaso, who I actually just interviewed back at Wizard World Atlanta Convention of Comics 2010. And so go ahead and peep this and we'll catch you on the other side. Hey guys, this is Adam. I'm here at, what is this thing called? Wizard World Atlanta Convention of something or other. I'm down here in Atlanta at a wizard convention. I'm here with Rich Tomaso, and Jay Chris introduced me to Rich earlier.
Is this loud enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I can get you. So Jay Chris introduced me to Rich, and he said he had an interesting story. He was telling me that right now most of your stuff is being published in Europe, and it's not even accessible here in the States. Is that exactly what it is?
Yeah, I'm not sure actually how that happened. I was working for Alternative Comics. That was the publisher I had done the last two or three books for, Miriam and Perverso, Name of Ghosts. He stopped publishing, and so while I was doing the first issue of Miriam, I got an email from this guy at Condition Sala overseas to do, and he was interested in doing Miriam as a graphic novel once it was like there was enough to collect. So after the first issue of doing that for Alternative, I didn't have anyone else to do it for, so I just did the book for France, and then I figured, well, once the book is done, it'll come out in France and then I'll show it around here. But I can't get anyone interested here in doing the book, mostly because it's a book one. It's not like the long story that's in there is like a part one, so it's not complete.
Yeah.
Which they were okay with doing there. So this is being published there, and the Sam Hill book is being published there.
And the Sam Hill's not out yet, right?
No, it's just online right now, yeah.
It's not a webcomic, though, is it? Is it an actual webcomic, or you are just posting it as it's being done?
Yeah, I'm just posting it as I'm doing it. As I'm writing and drawing it, every once in a while I'll color a page and then post it online.
And what's the Sam Hill about?
Sam Hill is a book that I've kind of been making notes about and writing like the past 10 years. Just a series of books that I wanted to do of historical fiction, but also I wanted to do something interesting with the crime genre. And years ago I kind of came up with the idea of basing character and stories on the work of Jim Thompson, who's one of my favorite like crime writers. So just after a bunch of false starts, I finally started the first book, so, and I'm about halfway through it.
So you've been working in the comics industry for a while now, though, right?
Yeah, about 16 years.
Yeah, so that is a
yeah,
while.
It's been a while.
So what other stuff will people maybe be familiar with your work from?
The first thing I did was for Fantagraphics called Clover Honey, and that was a crime graphic novel. And then I did some one-shots for them. I did a book for Dark Horse called The Horror of Collier County. And then basically the last three things that I did, A&F Ghost, Perverso, and Miriam were for alternative comics.
So you're writing everything in English.
Yeah.
From an American perspective.
Yeah.
And its only true existence in a printed published form is in French.
It's in French, yeah.
So when you, the Sam Hill, when you post that, you letter it yourself and everything, I take it?
Because
you do all the art. You write in art
and
everything.
I do everything, the lettering and all that.
So when you post it online, it's posted in English?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yep.
That's pretty awesome.
And what's funny, too, is because there's another publisher called La Cupola in Spain, and they publish The Horror of Collier County. And I got an email from them a couple of weeks ago after going to SPX and showing these books around all these U.S. publishers and just getting like, huh, this looks really good. And then like handing it back. I come home and I get an email from them saying that they're interested in everything that I have on my website and they want to know when they would be done and how long they were going to be. And so again, there's a Spanish publisher too that's like all into my stuff. But yeah, it's strange after like 15 years of just being published here, now everything's only being published over there, and I don't really have much interest.
Yeah, I don't really know what to think of that, and I can't imagine what you think of that.
It's really bizarre. I don't know what to make of it. I get, I occasionally get like letters from people, and I get recognition as far as like people reading it on the web. So it's like, oh, okay, so these guys are reading it and they like it, but no one has been like, so who's doing this or who's publishing this?
That's interesting. So the European stuff. So you're obviously selling okay if they're continuing, and people over there are obviously enjoying it, I guess, right?
I guess I'll find out. That this Pete and Miriam book came out. It was just published like in May, I guess, over there. So I'm going to England this year, and I'm supposed to do like a signing at a comic shop there.
Okay.
Like two different shops did these like color book plates and sent them to me to sign so they could put them in the books.
Oh, interesting.
And stuff, so
I've never seen anything like shops actually.
And they seem like they ordered a bunch. Like they sent me 100 of these things to sign. And so I was like, oh, well, that's, France is not the U.S., so it's small. But I was like, oh, well, that's great. They ordered a bunch of books. And
now, I've read a few books, French books, that are adapted or translated into English.
Yeah.
And, it definitely feels like reading a French book. You can kind of get the feel of it. I wonder, you write for an American audience.
Yeah.
You're not
writing
with in mind that French people are going to be reading this. You're writing as though...
Yeah, it's just like, especially this book. I mean, Sam Hill is just like, it's a historical period kind of piece. So it's not even really related to anything in my own lifetime. But the Peter and Miriam book is all just based on stuff that, I grew up with, like television shows, comics. And it's all like my life, basically, in New Jersey. And it looks funny just to see like 1980s New Jersey kind of like in the synopsis of this French book. It is bizarre to see that. Like, okay, so who's going to buy it? Like, someone in France is like, I've always wanted to know more about New Jersey in the 80s.
So you're hand lettering all of your stuff. You don't letter the French. Does somebody else letter the French, or do you do that too?
No, there are people actually there. There are two people that do all the lettering and logos in French over there.
Yeah.
And what's funny is a lot of my freelance work here is lettering stuff in English that Fantagraphics and Drawn and Quarterly publish here.
That are French books.
Like French or Spain or whatever.
Your art it looks like, I haven't read anything yet. We got some English stuff here, so I'll pick something up.
A couple of English comics.
But the art looks amazing. And I'm going to try to get, I'll get a little bit of some photos, some pictures so people can see. But I mean, like, you're drawing on super oversized paper there.
Yeah, I was when I was working on a book with James Sturm, the Satchel Paige Striking Out Jim Crow book, and I was living in Vermont and was doing a little bit of teaching at the Center for Cartoon Studies and working on this book. And this one weekend we had Chris Ware, Ivan Brunetti, and Seth that came to visit the school.
Okay.
And they had pieces of their work. And I was looking at Chris Ware's stuff, and it was really, really huge. And I was looking really close at it, and I was noticing that there's actually a lot more artwork that he was using brush. Like, a lot of times I was looking at his work, and I was like, oh, I wonder if he's using rapidograph for that or ruler. And I realized he was using brush for mostly everything, but at that large size, even small objects, he was able to get in there with a brush. And so when I started doing Miriam, I was like, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try drawing like really big. And it is easy because I was doing everything in this book with brush completely.
Yeah.
It was much easier to do that. It was much easier to get at everything with this, you know, number four brush, you know, at that size. So.
And I know that most comics are drawn larger than they're printed. But, I mean, at such a, I would say extreme, but it's not extreme, but it's such a larger format. I mean, is it more difficult to get an idea of what it's going to look like when it's smaller?
Yeah, I was a little worried about that. I just made sure that the lettering was pretty large. And then I don't do too much as far as, like, cross-hatching or detail stuff in backgrounds. I kind of kept things pretty simple as far as the objects in the background and all that were concerned. So it seemed to work out fine. And
awesome. Well, it all looks really good, man. I'm definitely I'm impressed by it. And it's I noticed it when we were over here. Jay Chris was talking earlier and everything, and definitely stands out. So
thank you.
What's their website?
The website is just www.richtomaso.com.
And Tomaso is
T-O-M-M-A-S-O.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Web of Comics, but that's the URL is just my name.
Okay.
.com, so.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Rich, man. It all looks good. I definitely look forward to seeing some American stuff that I can pick up. Yeah, I mean,
nice to see it in print and be able to read it.
This definitely looks good.
Yeah, it's like, again, like, that's like the nicest book I've ever had printed, like, hands down.
It's good quality. Well, thanks a lot, Rich.
Sure, thank you.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart.
He punched me in the heart. So that was Rich Tomaso. Next up, we have Caleb Monroe.
How long ago did you interview him? Wait, sorry.
It's
that's not the right response.
It was a few months ago. And Caleb Monroe was an interview that I did at Richard's Comics and Collectibles. Caleb Monroe is the writer on The Remnant, which is a Boom book, as well as his most recent, which is Hunter's Fortune. Both of those are really, really good books. Caleb is from around the way, but he's been over out west doing the Boom thing, and he was in town, and I caught up with him. And this is, I gotta say, it's a damn good interview, so enjoy. So, hey, this is Adam of the Dollar Band. I'm here at Richard's Comics and Collectibles in Greenville, South Carolina, and I'm here with Caleb Monroe, who is a former resident of Greenville, South Carolina, recently became successful with his Boom Studios books and moved away.
Yes. not in that order. But I did move. I moved out to L.A. about 9 years ago for a number of reasons. At the time, I didn't realize what some of them were, like meeting my wife, but that was part of the reason. And now I live and work in L.A. and have written a number of books for Boom Studios and a couple other things coming up, which I can't quite talk about yet, but which I'm going to go ahead and tease you with.
That's
so
fine.
You can be looking for.
Because I was going to ask if there's anything coming up. We'll save it for later. We'll see if I can get what I can get out of you. First, I guess we can start off with the first book that I read by you, which was The Remnant. And I love reading books from Boom Studios, so I would have read it anyway. However, Richard did present it to me when I came by the store after you had done your last stop by here, maybe your signing. So.
Right, back when I think that's right when the second issue of Remnant had come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he had one and two.
It was fresh.
So how did you get hooked up with Boom Studios?
It's a little bit of an interesting story, and it kind of goes a little way towards proving that that old adage that part of success is who you know. and I was really lucky and blessed, actually, that when I moved to L.A., after I'd been there for a number of years, I got a job working at Meltdown Comics, which is in Los Angeles and one of the biggest, if not the biggest shop in California, West Coast.
Yeah.
Big, fantastic, world-class store. And one of the managers there, the guy who actually hired me, mm-hmm. his name is Matt Gagnon, and we worked together at Meltdown for a while. And so he read all my self-published stuff. He got to read my comic pitches that hadn't been picked up yet. But you know what I mean? Like he was really familiar with my work. And then after we worked together for a couple of years, he got hired at Boom as an editor. And he now works there as the managing editor, sort of Wade's second in command. And it just so happened during his during his time there as an editor, this book, The Remnant, came across his desk, and having been familiar with my work, he thought it really fit my sensibilities and approached me about taking a crack at it. And I did a breakdown, a couple breakdowns, in which they thankfully liked enough to give me a shot at the series, and that's how it happened.
So The Remnant was created by Stephen Baldwin. Is that
The idea came from Stephen Baldwin, who is he's a fantastically sort of creative and enthusiastic person. And I mean, I remember just being at him at New York Comic Con, and he was just coming up with ideas like there. Like I was, you know, we were there signing for like an hour, and he was like, "Oh, I got a new idea for a movie," or like a very enthusiastic, very creative guy. And he, I don't know exactly how it was that he ended up getting into contact with Boom, but he did, I think through a friend of a friend. And he had this idea, thought it would work great as a comic. So he and Andrew Cosby, who's the co-creator of that TV show Eureka,
mm-hmm. yeah,
sort of wrote a treatment. And then based on the treatment, I scripted a four-issue miniseries. I was super lucky to be giving handed a document that two such great creators had worked on, you know, because there's always, I have never had it happen to me, but doing work for hire, there's always that, you have that little bit of a fear. You're like, someone's going to hand me a terrible idea and then I'm going to have to try to make it work, you know? And I'm so blessed that with Boom, that's never happened. They really, really know their stuff. They have great ideas. And so in this case, I was the best of both worlds. They handed me a fantastic idea, but also, you know, gave me a little free rein to sort of make it my own and to have fun with it. So it was fantastic.
So basically, being that, and we'll get into Hunter's Fortune as well, you also scripted Hunter's Fortune. With The Remnant, it was like you said, there was already a treatment mm-hmm. written. What was involved in your process to write the script of an already? I mean, did they have the beginning and the conclusion and the whole thing, and you just turned it into dialogue, or what's that process?
They had pretty much all the beginning and where they wanted it to end up, but large swaths of what was happening in between was left totally at my discretion, which is, I mean, at mine and my editor's discretion, obviously. And of course, that's an important distinction, because part of what I love working with Boom, part of the reason is because the editors there are fantastic. And I think after working with Matt, after working with Bryce, who is my editor on Hunter's Fortune, I really want to have good editors on anything I do in the future, even creator-owned books, you know, because I think both of the projects benefited from, you know, from the original treatments that I would tune in, or from the original scripts that I would tune in. It's just great to have somebody who really knows the medium, really knows their stuff, really knows storytelling, and is able to come back with some notes and help you tweak it and make it better. So, but that's part of why I call sort of The Remnant and both Hunter's Fortune being the best of two worlds, is that it's this fantastic idea, but I still get to do a lot of work and really make it my own. So
let's talk Hunter's Fortune now, which is your most recent.
Yes.
Was it co-created, or was Cosby that?
It was completely created by Andrew Cosby.
Andrew Cosby completely created.
And again, he's a brilliant writer, and he has so many good ideas. I love pretty much all of them. He's done a lot of great comics. I think X-Isle was where I was first exposed to him, an earlier Boom book, which mm-hmm. I just loved. Went on to, you know, watch all of Eureka, and he's done some great recent comics, The Swordsmith Assassin, and Hunter's Fortune was his idea, and he had a lot of a lot of greats. But, you know, he's working on a TV show and stuff. So, right. Again, it was Boom had liked what I'd done with The Remnant and gave me an opportunity to write Hunter's Fortune. And I really loved working on it. I think Remnant was my first book, and I'm super proud of it. After doing 88 pages of Remnant, you know, I was a little bit better writer, and I had learned some lessons, and I got to apply the new knowledge to Hunter's Fortune, which hopefully I'll keep doing project after project. So in that way, I think I stepped out from under my influences a little more on Hunter's Fortune. I think you get to hear a little bit more of my voice as a writer, which, of course, I'm still figuring out. Nothing is ever set in stone. But for that reason, I really, yeah. And the cast, part of what Andrew is so brilliant at is characters and being able to just boil characters down to little hooks where every character is different, but they all hook you in a different way and pull you into the story. And Hunter's Fortune is an ensemble, and it really is. It was really like that. And those characters had the same effect on me, where I started writing sort of liking certain characters, but by the end there was other characters that had grown and become my favorites.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Miranda in particular, who's kind of the villain of the piece. By the time I finished writing her, she really was my favorite. I really liked her a lot.
With the two books, basically, I guess they're both 4 issues.
Yes.
So I'm guessing you're given the entire story up front and then you script it out. It's not like where sometimes an artist will get the first book and then you'll script it out and then the second book. You're pretty much given the whole thing. You know, beginning to end when you start.
Yeah, I have to. It can be done that way.
Yeah.
But to write a good opening, I think you have to know what the ending is.
Yeah.
Because you want to plant all those seeds. There's that old saw that you, if there's a gun on this shelf in the first, I mean on the wall in the first act, it needs to be fired by the final act. And. Yeah. But the reverse of that is, if there is going to be a gunfire in the final act, you need to make sure you put it on the wall in the first act.
Yeah.
So I think that to write anything well, you need to know where it's going. You know, and we try to do that to a degree with the artist too, where we sent the artist, except for a few things. Where we were trying to maybe get a little preview art or something, you know, and we'd have the artist working ahead of time on covers or character designs.
Yeah.
Or Boom has hooked me up with the most amazing artists.
Yeah.
I got to do Julian Totino Tedesco's first book in the U.S. He's since went on to do Unthinkable, did a fantastic job, grew leaps and bounds even between those two projects. And Matt Cosson on Hunter's Fortune, fantastic artist. Both of those artists I have to figure out ways to keep working with before they become too big.
Well, hopefully you'll grow with them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but but try to give them an entire issue script at once.
Yeah.
We would, instead of doing it piecemeal, I would write the full issue, get the notes back from my editor.
Yeah.
We would finish up, and we're like, okay, that's it. Issue one is ready, and then send that to the artist so that even as they're drawing, they at least know how that issue is going to end, where it's going, that sort of thing.
After reading The Remnant, when Hunter's Fortune came out, I immediately knew that it was a book I was going to read because of the enjoyment I had from The Remnant. One of the things that has stood out to me about your writing, and something that I'm a stickler for, is you write great dialogue. You write very natural dialogue. The characters, when they're talking to each other, they feel like people talking to each other. They don't feel like I don't feel like I'm reading lines.
Right.
I feel like I'm listening to people talk. Is that something that you focus on? Is dialogue, or is it just kind of coming natural to you?
You know, when I'm actually scripting, I have to say that I'm probably not focusing on any particular thing, because at the same time that I'm doing the dialogue, I'm trying to think of what actions they're going to be doing in that panel and in the next panel, because what actions they're doing are going to affect where I break the word balloon and have them saying, you know. So I kind of approach it from a gestalt. I'm not really focusing on it, although sometimes I'll slip into sort of a zone with dialogue, and I'll write whole scenes of dialogue, and then I'll have to go back and break down the panels.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'll get into a zone with panels, and I'll write pages of panels, and then I have to go back and add in the dialogue. But what I do, sorry.
I said it in my head. I had to hold back not saying
that's right.
It. Lucky she didn't hear it.
What I do is I picture myself being each of the characters. And saying that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is a real person really going to say, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I will go through and change dialogue, because as I run the dialogue in my head, I don't say it out loud. A lot of writers will tell you to read it out loud, and that's actually fantastic advice, and I probably should take it, but I tend to do a lot of the work in my head. A lot of writers will actually sketch out thumbnails of what the page looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to do that, but now I'll just hold the page in my head, and I've... at this point, I've got a good idea of how much dialogue and how many panels and how much action I can fit on a page. And so as long as I can see it into my head, what the page would look like, and it's not too crowded, then I'll just, you know, script from there. But yeah, I won't say it out loud, but I do read it into myself over and over again in my mind. I'll read it, and not just a line. I'll have to read the lines before it and the lines after it to make sure that it flows. Mm-hmm. So I will do that. I'll go over and over and over again. And I probably, once I write a panel description, it will probably stay that way, you know, unless I change the whole layout of the page or whatever. Yeah. But when I write dialogue, I will fine-tune that, you know, and fine-tune it.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, like, your characters really, they interact with one another throughout the entire book. You have conversations, and it's not just, like, reading, like, lines.
Yeah.
It's reading people.
A lot of times I'll pretend that each of the characters is someone I've actually known in real life.
Yeah.
And scene to scene, it will change who they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Hunter and Trip uh-huh. are sort of an amalgam of me and three or four of my best friends that I've had over the years, because they were best friends. So for that best friend relationship, so sometimes it would be Caleb words coming out of Trip's mouth. Sometimes it would be one of my friends over the years, their words coming out of Trip's mouth. I would just sort of, you know, role play, like, scene to scene. Just, I would pretend, like, what if this was me and my friend Mike having this conversation?
Yeah.
That's a lot of how I would make that work.
Both these books are 4-issue, self-contained, but they obviously have a lot more room in those worlds.
Yes.
Are we going to see more?
I really hope so. It's up to Boom, ultimately.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're listening to this and you really particularly like The Remnant or Hunter's Fortune and you'd like to see more, you know, let Boom know, because, you know, part of the difficulty with a publisher Boom size, and they are certainly growing by leaps and bounds.
Absolutely.
But still, you can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're trying to put out a lot of new material. They're doing some Fantastic Kids stuff. And so, unfortunately, you can't do everything that you'd like to do. But I would love to do some more Hunter's Fortune. I would love to do some more Remnants. So, but we'll have to see.
I talked to Michael Allen Nelson. It's basically the same kind of answer there.
Yeah, exactly.
His books with Dingo and all that.
But that's part of what's great about Boom is they do these self-contained things.
Yep.
So you have they have this huge library of books that are like novels. You can pick it up and you can read it and you can get everything there is there. And you you know, there may be a sequel. They've done sequels. They've done particularly Farscape. They did a whole bunch of miniseries and then they went into two ongoing series they have right now. Same thing with a lot of their Pixar books where you'll see them do the miniseries as a pilot for something longer.
Yeah.
And you know, I would love to see. I think an ongoing Hunter's Fortune would be fantastic because it really fits that sort of ongoing format. But we will see. That's the official answer.
And I do love that about Boom. The same thing you say, like the four, like I can read this. I know that there's more possible. But if not, you know, I was happy. I had a conclusion, you know, with what I read. So I've enjoyed that approach that Boom has taken to publishing the books. So the other question toward the end, toward the conclusion, is you had mentioned maybe some teasers or something about some stuff that may be coming out. Do you have, like, both these books were created by other people and scripted by you. Do you have anything of your own creation?
Do I have a number of things. Most of the stuff of my own creation I self-published.
Okay.
So it's a little harder to get. Yeah. But, you know, I really should put them on my website. If any of you are interested in them, you can just go to CalebMonroe.com and you can there's a contact page. Email me and we can work something out.
Gotcha.
I self-published an all-ages title called Red Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And I self-published a short story called Paper Cut. Well, 16 pages called Paper Cuts, which later got published in Negative Burn.
Okay.
There's in Negative Burn 20 and 21 have a total of three creator-owned short stories for me in there, so you can get sort of a feel of my creator-owned work. I did a 20 and 21.
Okay,
I did a two-page creator-owned story that appeared in the back of Hackslash 23.
Okay,
from Devil's Due. Not really tied into Hackslash, but they put it in the back of Hackslash, and that story also appeared in the back of United Free Worlds. So I've done little, you know, I'm working on a bunch of creator-owned short stories right now. Don't really know where their home will be, but we'll hopefully try to, you know, find one. I recently wrote a graphic novel. I don't think I'm allowed to even say who it's for yet. I would really love to. Yeah. I'm dying to talk about it, but I can't yet. It should be announced later this year.
Okay.
And then, you know, my goal next is the creator in miniseries or the creator in graphic novel, the longer work.
Yeah.
And I have some artists on board already, which is really really hard part is finding a fantastic artist who can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's it's a much bigger time commitment for them than it is for me.
Yeah.
As much, no matter how much time I spend, it's a big commitment to draw all those pages. But I have some really amazing artists that I'm working with right now that I'm really excited about. So hopefully you'll see something creator-owned by me from me by next year.
Okay. Any other teasers?
That's it right now.
Okay.
But all the news always is at CalebMonroe.com. Any new things coming out.
Thanks a lot, Caleb.
You're welcome.
It's good to finally get this interview.
It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, so that was Caleb Monroe, and that was back at Richards Comics and Collectibles. Let's see, next up is a few interviews from Heroes Con. We're kind of working backwards through time here, and Heroes Con, we knocked out quite a few interviews. I've been dreading posting this one, and kind of never thought I was going to. But I'm going to go ahead and throw out the Ben Temple Smith interview from Heroes Con 2010. I guess it's a more of a ramble view or a sputter view. I don't know. It's terrible. Let's see. All right, this is Adam of the Dollar Ben. I'm here at Heroes Con 2010. I'm here at the end cap of Indie Island with Ben Temple Smith. Ben, how are you doing today?
Is this the end cap, is it?
Yes, it was. It's an end cap of Indie Island. I mean... This is the... I guess this is, yeah.
This, you didn't hear that before, is
no,
it?
No,
so this is the B&B row. It's the Ben McCool and Ben Temple Smith. Literally, we have a whole row of three booths just for us.
I saw that. I actually...
Space is not a problem.
I actually asked Dusty who had this table next to you guys, he said that you guys did.
How about I hold this microphone?
That's fine. If you
I
if
only
you're
draw
with
one hand.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Most people need two hands to draw.
I just
need one. I picked one long ago and decided this is the hand I'm going to use to draw.
And I see it's your left.
Yeah.
Does that make it more difficult with the whole ink smear thing? Do you draw from left to right?
Well, I draw from right to left.
Do you?
Well, I'm conscious of it. Can't write that way because I'm not, you know, Chinese or whatever. Up and down.
I'm left-handed, and I've always had the issue with ink smearing on the page as my hand goes across it.
Methodical and not terribly stupid, I guess.
Oh, damn,
I'm not saying
man.
You're stupid, but like you learn after a while that the ink will smear, and only occasionally do you remember that, accidentally forget that you smear it.
Then again, I don't draw.
I'm slightly more ambidextrous, though. I use a mouse with my right hand. I would play baseball as a right-hander.
Do you throw right-handed or just bat right-handed?
No, I throw left-handed.
Okay,
I throw left-handed, but batting I would be a right-hander.
Yeah, that's how I do too.
Oh well, then
now how about kicking?
Then we're blood brothers. Kicking, I'm a left footer.
Oh, see, I'm a right footer. Then it's over. It's over. This relationship is done.
Am I allowed to swear on this thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, fuck you, buddy.
How's Heroes Convent treating you?
Exceptionally well. It's really, really nice so far. Super busy in the morning.
Yeah.
Well. The afternoon through to now. Now it's quiet, so I can actually get some work done. Because I had a huge stack of commissions to get done, which is amazing. A lot of people have come out for me. It's great.
And I saw you made an announcement.
I did? What?
Saying
I don't make announcements.
Well, you made an announcement about doing commissions. You might have tweeted it or something.
I make an announcement for commissions at every convention I go to, though. Because I only do commissions at conventions.
Well, I didn't say this one was special.
You just made it sound very official.
Have you eaten yet today?
Nope. But that's by choice because the con treated me really well. But I'm not into eating food with my hands at a convention because I will get Ebola.
That's true.
I stick to liquids until I'm outside of the con. And then I stick to other liquids. But I eat some food there. I take care of myself a little.
You're making me forget all my questions.
Well, you're asking me questions.
Not that I had any. I don't plan for these. You may figure that out eventually.
Ask me where I get my ideas from.
Where do you get your ideas from,
Small
Ben?
Child in Botswana.
Yeah. Devin, do you have any questions for Ben? What are you currently working on? Not currently right now, but I guess...
I am working on Choker with the delightful writer Ben McCool, who is leaving for the day.
I am leaving for the day. Are you going to have... Cheerio, everybody.
You have time for an interview later in the weekend, Ben.
Sure, totally.
Other Ben.
He's much more entertaining than me, too.
Is he?
Yes.
I wouldn't go that far, but I do talk very, very funny. Even funnier than
that. He will tell you why the vinegar stroke is called the vinegar stroke. Or vinegar strokes.
Yeah, you know what?
We've been learning a lot with Ben McCool.
Yes. Okay, guys, I'll see you later, and I'll totally be up for that over the week.
Okay,
see you, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Oh, he's that was my partner in crime.
Well, thank you
but
for your
time. Not my
partner
in that way, if you know what I mean.
Let's see. So you
so
got
do you
here?
Have any questions? That
no,
are not, like,
I just really wanted to come over and these mics aren't even turned on.
Wow, you're like a time waster right now, aren't you?
So you got here. I saw before you even got here this morning, a lot of the advanced people were in here and there was a line
for me.
Waiting for you, I believe.
Yeah, there was a bunch of people who were literally wanted to get on a list for commissions, which was really nice. And they're really nice people. And I'm only now getting started on them properly, so...
And I heard you were doing free sketches?
No.
No? Is that well, I wrong? I doodles? Happily... Free doodles, maybe?
Yeah. Well, you've got to economize because you've only got so much time. But if someone's an obvious fan and they've got books and they've got things and they ask for a quick sketch, as long as it's nothing hugely intricate and they're happy with a quick thing, that's what I'm here for. But if you want a seriously painted proper thing by request of what they specifically want, that's going to cost you a little bit of money now. I'm sorry, because they take a bit longer to do.
And
I try to be fair to everyone, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, it's a big thing for some fans to come out to this thing. And if I was a fan, I would want at least something, even if I couldn't afford, like, a proper commission from an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to come away with something. And I have to say thank you to everyone that buys my books, because I wouldn't be anywhere if they didn't.
Yeah.
So I'm very aware of being thankful for what I do and trying to pull my finger out for everyone, if I can. Until by Sunday, because you're completely fucked by Sunday. You're mentally not able to do a lot.
So good luck to those coming on Sunday.
Well, it's because you've been out drinking so much. It's convention comms.
Oh, it is. It's, I believe, like, usually... Oh, man. Yeah, anyway. This is a part of my... my weight loss program. Basically, HeroesCon, I don't eat the entire weekend, and I just run around all day.
Oh, no, I've used that excuse before that my conventions are a weight loss for me.
Yeah.
Great weight loss. And then it was explained to me by another professional, yes, it's weight loss, it's also muscle mass. Muscle mass ain't so easy to get back.
And you missed HeroesCon last year.
Yeah, I can't remember why, but it was for a valid reason.
It disappointed a lot of people.
I rarely pull out of things, so...
I think I thought you did it just so that when you came back this year, there would be more anticipation.
Yeah, I like teasing people. No, I had no... I can't remember the reason, but it was a date conflict or something.
Yeah.
They happen.
What are we going to be seeing more Wormwood?
Yeah, early next year.
Early next year?
Hopefully.
Okay, cool.
When I start writing it and drawing it.
Yeah.
I already have the title already, so it'll be a new miniseries. It's called Bingo Night in Valhalla.
Yeah. And then you're doing the... Choker right now.
Yes,
with Ben
I'm
McCool.
Finishing up Choker still.
How many
I apologize
issues is that
for a
going?
Bit late. What?
How many?
Six
issues.
Six. So it's a longer commitment than I'm used to making. So
has it been late?
A little bit.
I haven't noticed.
I've been a very busy boy. So.
What are you busy doing?
A lot of work. A lot of conventions.
A lot of work.
I have an astronomical amount of work to get done when I go home after this one. So.
And I know you were doing, were you exclusive IDW for a while?
That was a working visa sort of related issue, really. But yes, I was exclusive technically for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
Until I said, I think I don't want to be exclusive anymore. I'm far too independent-minded for that, really. So, I was getting crazy offers to do other things as well. So,
anything you can talk about?
Well, I did some stuff for EA. Mm-hmm. And I've got more stuff to do for EA, which I'm horribly behind on. It's related to a computer game.
Yeah.
And that's all I'll probably say right now. Just for now.
That's enough. That's enough for everybody.
But yeah,
for now,
I get around. I forget the other stuff I did. I've done a bunch of stuff since.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do a lot of work. I do a lot of books and projects. So,
what triggered the whole doing that Presidents of the United States book?
My love of history and my love of America.
Yeah.
Despite what certain people might think of my opinions. People who consider people un-American because they have an opinion that is potentially negative, stupid. Because you might hate a sibling.
Mm-hmm.
Certain things that a sibling does or your parents do, it doesn't mean you hate them. It means you want to improve them, usually.
Mm-hmm.
So, doing that prisoner's book, it's like, how many people that say someone, because we're past the Bush years now, it's great. And this is a presidentially related thing, but I've done a book on the fucking presidents because I like things so much, and I know a little bit more than a lot of people now because of that, and... Those people can shut up, basically. How many of them have made a book on the presidents or in their country? That sort of deal.
And
not people know I've done a book on the presidents. And I was really proud that I did that. So it was a lot of work, though.
Oh, well, absolutely. It's a beautiful book.
Wait, thank you.
Is it a combination of like a lot of your work, a combination of paint and digital?
Yeah, it's the same as all my other work, just in a serious tone.
Yeah.
People thought I wasn't going to be serious with it, but there's no tentacles in it.
And then, so the write-ups, like the little like history write-ups of each president that you did, did you have those in mind before doing the art, or did you do the art and then go back and then do the write-ups?
No, I did most of the write-ups.
Yeah.
Because the art is slightly related to each thing. There's like a collage of events that occurred during their thing.
Mm-hmm. And as people can tell, Ben is from Savannah, Georgia, from his accent.
Actually, I'm from Mississippi.
Oh,
you were
Mississippi.
Close.
Oh,
you were close.
I knew it was somewhere down in that south. You're from Australia.
Originally, yes.
And you've been, how long have you been here in the States?
Overall, about 4 years, probably.
Okay.
But currently like 2.5, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just got my residency card thingy, so I'm perfectly legal. I was legal before. But
so you're planning to stay?
Not forever.
Oh, no?
No. I plan on living in several countries over my life, and America is a big one.
Yeah.
But I'd love to live in like some places in Europe for a while, and maybe also New Zealand at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love travel and the world too much to stay in one place for too long. So,
what draws you? I just did a...
But I love America, obviously. It's the heart of my comic industry. So it's not like I'm leaving anytime soon.
I did... I just did like a horror panel recently. What draws you to...
I'm sorry. Why was it so shit? You said you did a horror panel.
Not horrible.
Oh.
The horror genre. Horror.
Oh, okay.
I did a horrible panel. It's because you weren't there. What draws you to that genre?
To which genre?
The horror genre.
I don't know.
Scary pictures and
apparently
stuff.
Apparently my art just lends itself to a bit of mood, basically.
Yeah.
And I like drawing nasty things, but I'm not actually a huge horror fan. I'm more science fiction. Dark
science fiction. Do you consider yourself horror or more science fiction?
I don't consider myself anything. I consider myself eclectic.
Yeah.
I just like dark things, but that doesn't necessarily make them horror.
Yeah.
Schindler's List is a true horror film, but most people don't consider that horror. Schlock horror is not my style. You know, slash... I mean, I like a bit of blood, but I like blood in history books and things as well. So
yeah,
I like a lot of things.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so how many, basically are you just working on your commissions the rest of this weekend, or do you get commissions every morning, or?
No.
Who knows?
I'm probably full up for the whole con now.
Full for the con?
Yeah, that's why I'm going to have to work madly before I do any fun stuff.
Well, I'll let you get back to work, man. Anything else you want to promote real quick before I head out?
Yes, I also have a new book called Squid Girls. I'm actually self-publishing now as well. So
okay.
I released a 100-page hardcover art book called Squid Girls, which is squid and girls.
Yeah.
Tentacular erotica, or erotica tentacular, that will soon only be available at cons or on my website, which is templesmith.com, or templesmitharts.com as well. That's not up there yet, but it will be soon. And they're $50 each with a personal sketch, and they're very limited edition.
So you don't have them yet, so I can't buy one from you. I'll have to buy it on your website.
I sold out on the Friday. Sorry, sold out today. I'll have more tomorrow.
Oh, did you? You have them with you here?
Or, they're being new ones are being delivered to the hotel tomorrow.
Awesome.
But, yep.
Well, let me get you really back. Well. I'll let you get back, Ben.
I enjoyed quite a bit talking and drawing. So, at the same time,
next time I'll be more prepared. Maybe I doubt it. I honestly do.
That's right. We had a great chat. Didn't we?
I think so.
I was
fun.
A bit of a bastard, but that's
it was
fine.
Nice. It was nice meeting you.
Well, very nice to meet you.
Yeah, I enjoyed this.
Now we can like hold hands and stuff, right?
We can. I can see you on the street, and
no,
our eyes can meet, and we can embrace. Maybe. Maybe.
Well, if that's how they do things down south, I mean, fair enough.
Yes, it is. That's our way. So next time, we'll have to embrace.
I'm told you guys have guns.
Yeah, big on guns.
Not so much on education or evolution, though.
Apparently. No. Unfortunately, I'm actually from. I'm from the D.C. area. I live in South Carolina, and we, I believe, are second to last in education. Which means that's if I stay there, that's where I'm raising my kids.
I saw a thing on TV last night. Yeah, Mississippi beats you. Don't worry.
Oh, absolutely.
Think I'll ever be going to Mississippi for some reason.
I'm avoiding it. I almost got sent down there. I'm not doing it.
Well,
not
that
doing
would suck. I'm sorry. I've never been. It's probably lovely.
It may be.
Not for me, really.
No.
It's
also really hot and humid down there.
Nah, not my sort of weather.
No.
Ever. Have I slagged off your country enough now?
Oh, no. I have a love for this country as well.
I have a love for the country.
And I said as well, absolutely. But that doesn't mean I love every aspect of it.
No. Pass me these places in Australia, you do not want to go.
I'm planning on heading down there the next couple of years. I do want to go to Australia. Well, I'm probably just be going to Melbourne, though.
Melbourne is the best city in Australia, honestly.
Yeah. I got a friend down that way. So
it's the New York of Australia, and Sydney is the LA of Australia.
Never been to LA? I really have no interest in LA, so I will be going to Melbourne.
Yeah.
If that's
the Sydney
case.
Just looks a bit pretty in the touristy section, and then the rest is crap. Sorry, Sydney people. I'm from Perth, and Perth is, you know, even worse, so I left. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
I love Perth, too, but everything has its bad points.
Well, thanks a lot for your banter, Ben.
You're very welcome.
Enjoy the rest of the COD.
Thank you very much.
Not only did I not post my own interviews that I spearheaded, but I didn't post a few of Brian's either. And this next collection is Brian interviews from Heroes Con 2010. I don't know how good they are because I haven't listened to them yet, but I bet you they're really informative.
All right, this is Brian for the dollarbin.net. I'm on the floor at Heroes Con right now over at the Boom Studios booth, and I'm sitting here with...
I'm Amy Mebison. I Yes.
So, is this your first visit at HeroesCon?
For HeroesCon, yes. Yeah, it's like my third con this year, but first time in Charlotte.
How are you enjoying it so far?
It's very good. It's buzz is incredible here, and a lot of unbelievably talented people in the house.
I imagine that the sketch covers that you guys are doing, the blank covers, have made you very busy this weekend.
Yes. The head's been down almost constantly. You have to like sneak away to get a bite to eat. But look, the public response is incredible, and people just love watching. Usually it just takes, you just watch the drawing, and then they go, ooh, I want one of those now. And so next thing I know, I've got another one on the list. So
you're in a pretty interesting position with, not only are you doing really iconic characters that pretty much everyone you're going to bump into knows who the Muppets are,
yeah,
but you're also having to follow an award-winning creator on that as now his co-conspirator.
Yeah.
what are both of those like? Are you finding yourself gathering new fans, both because you're on such a great book and because you're working with such great characters?
Not particularly. I mean, just working on the Muppets alone has got a lot of new fans, but not really so much from working with Roger. I mean, basically, I'm just filling in for Roger while he takes a break. So he's still writing it and he's still drawing it, and the Muppet Show is still his baby. But he's fantastic to work with, and his scripts are an absolute joy. And because I've mostly drawn the Muppet classics, but to draw the regular Muppet Show is fantastic. So I would love to draw more of it sometime.
How is it for you with those characters? Do you find yourself trying to draw them in a comic book sense, or do you find yourself drawn to draw them like how they would appear on the TV show or the movies? How do you approach puppets as a comic book character?
Well, pretty much. I've come from animation, so where we're told, it's all taught about very solid construction, and the characters have to move convincingly in three dimensions, even though it's a flat drawing. So I'm used to deconstructing solid characters and figuring out how they're put together. And certainly with the Muppets, I'm always being very respectful of Don Salin and Michael Frith and Jim's designs, because they designed these characters to look a certain way and project a certain appeal. And I definitely try to respect that when I'm drawing them. I try to draw them as they actually are, and I mean, so I'm known as the one who draws them the realistic way,
right,
as opposed to Roger, who's goes for the tooniness and the comedy aspect more than personality in their appearance. So it takes all kinds.
I think that's really a fantastic thing for people who really like art, though, to look for, is there is a difference in your style where, like, you could almost find people looking for, all right, where's the hand, sort of a thing. Do you get a kick out of that, or is that just your natural style?
Definitely. No, I mean, with the Muppets, and certainly with Kermit most of all, it's like, yeah, I want to see the hand in there, because really that's where Kermit's essential Kermitness comes from, is what Jim did with just his hand and a green sock.
Yeah.
And that's really a huge part of his personality. So, yeah.
Who was your favorite Muppet before you got the job, and who have you found out that you liked drawing more than maybe you thought you were going to?
I don't know. I'm a colossal girl, so I guess I've always loved Piggy, because she's just so glamorous and powerful at the same time.
Yeah.
Since I've started working on the Muppets, I mean, and I've always loved Kermit as well. Kermit is still, I think, my favorite character to draw. But since I've been drawing the Muppets, I found a new love for Janice, because she has such a big role in Peter Pan, and I'm gravitating towards all the female characters here, but we were so excited we got to bring Skeeter back from Muppet Babies.
Yes.
And Disney, we were amazed Disney let us do it and designed her, and it was great to bring her back. we need a tomboy back in the cast again.
what kind of challenge has that been, like you said, kind of reshaping classic stories, but also reshaping them with other classic characters, like for the Muppet? Is that something that falls naturally into place for you, or is it something you kind of struggle with, like, all right, who fits for this particular character?
Yeah, it's like a lot of that is done by the writer, as I haven't actually written anything yet, but certainly, you know, the writers usually invite input for casting and things like that, and it depends on what kind of original story you're working with and what kind of range you've got to work with. Peter Pan was kind of tricky in a way, because Kermit has to be Peter, but the two are total opposite in personality.
Right.
So sometimes it's a bit tricky to try and, because you want to keep them first and foremost as Muppets and not just have them be a Kermit-shaped Peter Pan, because you want to, if you want to watch Peter Pan, you'll go and read the book or watch the Disney movie, but you want to buy these books to read
right.
Muppets. So first and foremost, we try and keep the Muppetness in as much as we can, even if we have to like bend the original character to fit the Muppet character.
And
so.
Even like you said, the writer may kind of make the determination on who's who, but you're the one that kind of has to shape that and make it work so that, like you said, that's Peter Pan and it's Kermit at the same time,
yeah.
Not one over the other.
Yeah,
too much.
It's yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes the characters just kind of do it themselves, because like with Janice, she was cast as Wendy and in Muppet Peter Pan, and the next thing we knew, the story had evolved into this big growth story for her, and she ends up being a much more powerful presence in the story, and she has her own development instead of just being Wendy the little mother. So it's interesting. Like I said, this is only I've just started a Muppet Sherlock Holmes. It's the second Muppet Classics
wow.
series I've done. I'm doing, and yeah, so we're just hammering it all out there. And,
Can you give us any hints on that? Is Kermit going to be Sherlock? And,
well, I think I can. It's been solicited, so
oh, okay.
It's been so. And a couple of covers are already out. So Gonzo is going to be Sherlock Holmes.
Nice.
And our narrator, Dr. Watson, is Fozzie. He's a stand-up comedian and doctor. And Kermit is going to be Inspector Lestrade.
Nice.
He's the straight cop, the good cop, and. Of course, this being Sherlock Holmes, we have to have our Irene Adler, so no prizes for guessing who that is. It's an excuse to dress Miss Piggy up in beautiful, elaborate 1890s outfits.
Exactly. Now, for Boom, you also did Monsters, Inc. as well, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
The art
yes.
for that. How was that to translate? I mean, that would the Muppets have so much history, but Monsters, Inc. was basically one Pixar movie. How was that to translate? You said if you come from animation, was
yeah.
that easier than the Muppets to translate
to
different formats?
Yeah, Monsters, Inc. was the first title I did for Boom, and I was like all over it because the Pixar comics have not been done before, and these are all new original stories, all subject to approval by Disney, of course.
Yes.
And basically, I approached Monsters, Inc. as again, the guys and the designers and the concept artists at Pixar, they are my absolute idols. And, you know, I've worked in the industry, I know how much work goes into designing those characters. So I approached it with the way of how would Monsters, Inc. look if it was a 2D animated movie. So I'm from traditional animation, they do CG, but we all still design along the same concepts, pencil on paper. So it's so that was a lot of fun to translate to. So they're flat images on paper rather than beautiful CG models, but they're still very solidly constructed, I hope.
Those are, you mentioned you have Muppet Sherlock Holmes coming up. You have mm-hmm. anything else you'd like to mention as coming?
Well, after that, I'm as in the dark as everybody else. It's like Boom's got a lot of projects on slow simmer, and I don't know what I'll be doing after that. So,
besides people being able to find what you're publishing monthly through Boom Studios site, mm-hmm. Do you have a personal website where people can look at your portfolio or follow you online?
Yeah, I don't have as much time to work on original stuff as I'd like, but yes, my site is www.mimisgrotto.com. I also have a blog, just a Blogspot blog. Just amymebison.blogspot.com, and yes, where I post stuff when I can find the time, and
when you have a spare moment,
you can keep tracking them on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Thank you very much. Very nice to meet you. I really, really enjoy. I love the Muppet books when it's Roger, but mm-hmm. I love the way you do the artwork as well. Like you said, I'm always looking for the hand.
Thank
and
you.
And I thought that was a great change to. A subtle change to the art while still, you know, kind of staying in the same vein.
I mean, Disney in general with the Muppets have been fantastic. I mean, they are we have a dedicated Muppet team at Disney who screen all our stuff, and they're very open to different art styles. So we've got Roger, and we've got James Silvani and Shelley, and Paraline and me, and we're all just all this different styles, but they all kind of somehow work with the Muppets. So, yeah. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
And for now, that's all I got for you. So, I'd like to thank you guys for listening. And, you know, the year is not over yet. Hopefully, we'll get another good group show in for you before the end of the year here. But, you know, have a good year. And all those interviews is kind of fun to kind of listen back to events past. Thanks for listening. And Sean, you want to take us out?
Dreidel, 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 I made you out of clay. When you're dry and ready, with dreidel I will play. To make our Jewish friends not feel left out.
Hey, this is Adam and Heather. We're over against the back wall at SPX, where we've cornered Pat Lewis.
Hey, I was just having a conversation with him. You're the one that interjected the mics back here.
Well, I told Pat earlier that I wanted to talk to him, and I was getting ready to put my stuff away, and I was like, you know what? Pat looks really relaxed over there. Yeah. I'm going to go disturb him.
Yeah.
He's been doing this to me all day. I was taking pictures of Roger Langridge earlier, and Adam's like, what are you doing, Heather? And then Roger's like, ah. Adam would be like the guy on the nature show where you've set up and you're like, I'm going to get my picture of this bird, this rare bird. It lands and Adam's going to be like, ah, I'm a tiger.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I haven't said anything to you back here that I wouldn't be willing to say on tape. Do you use tape? Is that how they do podcasts?
I called it digital tape earlier.
Digital tape.
I actually referred to it. I said I was out of tape. And yeah, I was yeah, like, yeah. Kind of.
Right, right.
Try to take the batteries out, and I'm like, that's not the card.
Yeah.
Tape card battery.
Whatever.
So, Pat.
Yes.
You just finished up your Cragmore.
Yes.
Series.
Cragmore. Yeah. Yeah, it was.
That's
fun. Four
like
mini comics.
He's cute.
Thank you. Yeah, four mini comics I did. I pretty much tried to have one mini comic for each show, and just finished the last one. So I put all four together in a nice little 148-page book.
Can you tell us a little bit about Cragmore? I know it involves a devil because that's what enticed me was
yes.
that cover of that red devil that just looks joyful.
Yeah, it's about a billionaire, sort of a Donald Trump-style billionaire.
Does he have a comb-over?
Not quite. He has a little... He's losing his hair, but he dies. He has a near-death experience, and he realizes... As a result of that, that hell is actually real, and he's going to go to hell when he dies unless something changes. So when he comes back to life, he's brought back to life, he realizes he has a second chance at life, and he makes some changes, but not quite the changes that everyone would expect.
Yeah, it looked interesting. I flipped through a couple of pages since I just picked it up today, and
mm-hmm.
I noticed something in the beginning where he was, I guess, building a new building and said something about running off that hobo camp. And his assistant says, you mean that homeless shelter? And he's like, huh? He's like, don't you remember the protesters?
Yeah, yeah. Cragmore's not a nice guy. He's kind of an Ebenezer Scrooge for the 2000s.
But he goes through the experience, and unlike Ebenezer, who wakes up a changed man, is,
yes.
Maybe I'll fix a couple things, but...
Yeah, 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 that was the idea, to sort of put some twists and turns in that
it
wouldn't go...
Maybe hell's not so bad, you know,
well,
maybe I could run hell.
He's got some unusual ideas, things that the devil does not care for.
So how'd you come up with the idea of this billionaire going to hell?
You know what, I always kind of... I notice a lot of indie comics are about people, characters who are basically the same as the creator, you know, so it's a lot of like 20-something or, you know, slackers who have lousy jobs and lousy relationships, and I really wanted to do something with sort of a, you know, a break with that, and that's why, like, my first book, The Claws Come Out, all the characters
Amazing
were women.
Amazing book.
Thank you. All the characters were women because I wanted them to be different from me, and then with this, I wanted to think, well, you know, what's another kind of character that would be different from me? And I thought, well, an older guy and, you know, a rich guy. I'm neither really old nor rich. So, and I kind of went from there.
So how do you get inspiration for writing women when you're a man?
Pat Lewis draws some sexy, cartoony women, by the way.
There you go. Yeah, I don't know.
I
mean,
it's sexy cartoon.
No, it's absolutely amazing. Like, amazing.
Yeah, thanks.
Well,
wow.
All right,
that's a little too enthusiastic.
It reminds me of that movie that Jack Nicholson is the romance novelist, and they're like, well, how do you write women when you're a man? And he says,
I think of a man and I take away all common sense. Right? It's my Jack Nicholson impression recorded for the first time ever.
So is that what you did? You took how you do things and you're just like, now I'm going to be like crazy?
I mean, I know women. I've interacted with women before, much as people might think to the contrary.
I'm not sure some of the people here have interacted with women.
Yeah, we could point out a few, but that would be mean.
So last time I talked to you, at least, was a few years ago.
No, it was like earlier today.
Well, the last time I talked
on
to you.
Recording, yeah, yeah.
On, yeah.
Pardon me.
Yeah, that is more accurate.
Okay, yeah, yeah. All right.
Take two.
Yes.
The last time I talked to you on mic, it was right before the calls come out.
Okay.
And I was really excited about it.
Yes.
And when it came out, I immediately bought it.
Thank you. I spent that money.
And so how did that work out for, I'm, you know, how, like, that's a really good book and I really like to help promote it. And why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a nice calling card to have, you know, it's a hardcover book. I was able to get a million copies, from the publisher IDW. It was, you know, for a while there, they did a really good job of getting it in comic book stores. So I think, you know, a lot of people who wouldn't have seen my work otherwise got to see it. But it's kind of out of print now, and all the remaining copies are really at my apartment. So, people wanted to get in touch with me or check it out on my website.
What is your website?
Lunchbreakcomics.com.
Comics not with an X?
It is not with an X. It's Lunchbreak, C-O-M-I-C-S. Yeah.
So he spelled it like a real word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like .com. People who spell real words.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because you can use a K or the X, and that's just too confusing.
Yeah, I just like regular words.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, if anybody wants to get a hold of it now,
yeah, just find me.
Shows.
Unless the store
still has it, because it can still be ordered?
Yeah, I mean, there's still copies that turn up. You know, a lot of comic shops still have a copy or two on their shelves. Like I said, if you find me, look at my website. I can send them to people or, shows.
And kind of like, again, we talked about it years ago, but it's kind of a Elvira-type character.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Narrating.
The book, it's a series of short stories, right? And they all have different characters, so I wanted some sort of common thread to tie it together. So I was trying to get actually Elvira to write the introduction to the book, and I exchanged some emails with Elvira's assistant, which, imagine if that was your job, being Elvira's personal assistant.
Do you put that like on the business card?
I would think.
Like, that's your title? Not just assistant, Elvira's assistant.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to get you in some doors. So I exchanged some emails with this guy, and ultimately I was informed that Ms. Cassandra Peterson is her real name, was unable to write a foreword to my book. So I thought, you know what, to heck with it, I'm going to make up my own Elvira, and my Elvira-like character, I should say, for legal reasons. And she's sort of the Crypt Keeper, and she's sort of Elvira, and she, you know, sort of like a late-night B-movie horror hostess, and, you know, it's got all the puns and the bad jokes and the innuendo that you expect from such a thing.
Yeah, your style, you definitely have, I guess, what was referred to as a cartoonist style, I think, is what...
Okay.
It's basically where you write and draw, and in your story pacing is very gag-oriented.
Yeah,
as far as your pacing goes, and you kind of write like the old strip guys and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's nothing real fancy. I guess I'm more interested in story and storytelling, and, you know, and pacing and jokes than in stuff like, you know, trying really crazy panel layouts and stuff. It seems like it's a good book. A lot of people, a lot of guys I know, can give it to like their wives or girlfriends or, you know, even like a relative who's just not really into comics, and people seem to be able to appreciate it for its own merits like that.
So what's your creative process like? Are you lock yourself in silence?
Yeah, drink a lot. No. I don't know. I try to, I like to go to the coffee shop, and, you know, I try to write stuff down, and then come back and spend a lot of time isolated in a sad apartment listening to tearful music.
What kind of tearful music?
No, I don't listen to tearful music. I listen to podcasts, much like this one.
Ah, so you're listening to podcasts while you're drawing and writing.
Oh, yeah, it's the best.
Any music or anything?
Yeah, once in a while. Are you really interested in my music? I don't know.
Tell me what you listen to, Pat. I make you
an iTunes playlist. Here's what I always do.
Tell me your
Here's
playlist.
What I always do. Like, when you got an idea for a comic, and you're like, man, I really want to draw this comic, but what I want to do more than draw this comic is make up an iTunes playlist. Because that's really like it's the least productive thing you can do that is still somewhat related to making a comic.
And what's the most embarrassing thing on your iPod?
I don't know. Well, alphabetically, it would start with ABBA. That's a little bit embarrassing.
Anything on, you just finished the Cragmore, anything on the horizon? Have you already moved on to your next project?
No, I really haven't. I'm, you know, going to try to have a social life again for a little bit. And, and I'm weighing a lot of ideas. I got a bunch of stuff knocking around in the noggin right now, so we'll see which one eventually surfaces. No, it's all right.
Couple of shows coming up in the future, anything?
Next year, I'm not sure. I should be at Heroes. Hopefully, I'll do TCAF next year again. That was a lot of fun. So, I'll see. I'm just going to play it from here on.
Lunchbreakcomics.com.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
All right, bye, Adam.
Bye.